Hi, I'm Neil Stavem. Thanks for checking out this podcast from Connecting Faith. You can hear the show live each weekday at noon on Faith Radio. And there are many more podcasts for this and all our Faith Radio shows available online. Our web address is myfaithradio.com. And thanks for your gifts to this listener-supported ministry. Enjoy the podcast.
Always expect something good on your lunch hour. Connecting Faith with Life.
Hello and welcome to Connecting Faith. Thank you for tuning in. I'm Neil Stavem. I always love the opportunity to get together here on a daily basis. And we talk about issues that have impact in our lives, how we can connect faith to life, how we can apply biblical principles to daily life situations. And I want to just say today, happy Veterans Day, and salute those who have worn the uniform of our military and who still serve today. And we honor you and salute you. And we're going to spend some time talking with a veteran today who has spent, in fact, not too long ago, just returned from a gathering of fellow mates that served together in World War II. And we're honored to welcome Bob Clemens to the microphone. Bob, enlisted in the Army Air Force after high school graduation back in 1942, and he was trained as a navigator during World War II, stationed in Italy, flew about 50 B-17 bombing missions over Europe. We're going to talk about that. What is, I think, worth some note as well is mentioned that Bob just celebrated his 90th birthday in jail, I think, and we'll get to that story as well. Bob, welcome. I know you're a friend of Northwestern Radio Ministry, so it's an honor to visit with you.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
We want to get the story a little bit because we want to honor our servicemen and women, and thought we'd just talk with a veteran that has quite a record. So let's go back and kind of pick up the story. You went in the Army after high school. Talk a little bit about the circumstances and what prompted that.
So. I graduated from White Bear High School in May of 1942, and I enlisted and went into the Army Air Force in November of 42. I'd gone to college for a few months in there, and then went into the Air Force, the Army Air Force.
Of course, that was right in the middle of World War II, right?
Yes. Went on to be an aerial navigator. I had my wings and my commission when I was 19 years old, which wasn't so unusual in those days. It was a war of very young men. And then I took some further training in a B-17 and ended up in Italy in the 15th Air Force, where I flew 50 bombing missions over Europe.
You know, as you say, it was a young man's military then. I mean, I guess it kind of still is. But yeah. Was it partly because all your friends were enlisting that you decided to go, or what?
Well, as a little kid, I always thought I'd like to fly. Mm-hmm. I remember one of my aunts giving me a metal airplane when I was about 6 or 7 years old. But I always figured that we were too poor that I ever would be able to take flying lessons. So when World War II came along, I thought, this is my chance. Now, this was tough to convince my parents because I'm an only child. And they weren't so sure they wanted me to do this, but they finally gave in and let me enlist. Yeah. And so I did enlist, as I say, in November of 1942.
Did you have, experience or abilities that would sort of get you pushed into the navigator training area?
Yes. Math was always my favorite subject in high school, and so that kind of fit me exactly.
Yeah.
And part of my training, after I took Army basic training, because the Air Force was part of the Army, they sent us to a college training detachment. I went to Washington University in St. Louis for 4 or 5 months, and we brushed up on our math and our physics. Okay. And so that kind of came together just the way I hoped it would.
Yeah. Did you get to do some flying on your own as well, or were you always sitting in the navigator chair?
No, I got to do some flying on my own. And then our pilot wanted several of us trained to be able to get the airplane on the ground should he and the co-pilot be shot up.
Sure.
So
Tell me a little bit about the B-17. How big a crew did it
B-17 have? Has 10 men on it, six enlisted men and four officers, 13 50 caliber machine guns, carried 6,000 pounds of bombs, 2,800 gallons of 100-octane gasoline. Was a marvelous aircraft to take a awful beating and still bring you home.
Yeah. You know, we were just chatting before the broadcast about Louis Zamperini. Of course, people have heard of his story. He was a bombardier in the B-24, which were notoriously hard to fly. Was the B-17 a good plane to fly?
Yes, the B-17 was considerably easier to fly than the B-24. Now, the B-24 flew carried a little more bombs, carried 8,000 pounds of bombs, flew a little faster, not quite as high. But they both had a place in World War II.
Sure.
And Zamperini, of course, was in the Pacific.
Yeah, yeah. You went to Italy, based there, right?
So, yes, at Foggia.
Okay. So talk about you came right into the middle of that European war theater, right, when you got in. Talk about your life experience there.
Yeah, I started flying missions on June 16th, 1944, and finished on September 12th. We were right in the midst of the heavy bombing campaign against the Germans. Our object was to bomb strategic targets, which meant oil refineries, factories that made tanks or ball bearings or airplanes. Strategic, way ahead of the troops. And, of course, the bombing was tough because the anti-aircraft fire was tough. The German fighters were tough. And it was kind of a tough life. But we were so well trained. I thought the training was magnificent. And one of the things in the training was the discipline that we learned. Now, I had been highly disciplined in my home. My mother would have made a good drill sergeant in the Marines. She was really a disciplinarian, and that paid off well for me in the military.
In just a matter of knowing how to sort of hold your life together and do what need to be done, those kinds of things? So.
Yes. She set a good example. She was a real follower of Jesus Christ, and I wasn't at that time. In fact, while I was flying those missions, I used to pray to God and say, you know, if you get me through this, I'll help you out when I get back, as if the God who owns the cattle on a thousand hills needed my help. But then 31 years later, at age 51, I became a follower of Jesus Christ. And that's changed my life drastically. It's made my life much better. And it's, in fact, now at age 90, this is the best time in my life.
We're hearing a little bit about the life story of Bob Clemens. Bob is 90 years old, celebrating life today, and he's also a World War II veteran. He served as a navigator during World War II and flew B-17 bombing missions over Europe, about 50 of those. Bob, we'll come back and talk more about your story of coming to faith in Christ. You had a believing mother, and I'm sure a praying mother. I'm sure that every time you went out on a mission, though, there was risk that you wouldn't return. Now, talk about maybe just, you know, how did you prepare for that? And you probably experienced some crews that didn't come back. So.
Yes, we did. But when you're 20 years old, you always think it's going to be the other guy that gets it. And so it seemed confident in my mind that I was going to make it. And we had a marvelous crew. And particularly the crew commander, the pilot, was a very mature guy. He was 28 years old, and that was good for us young fellas because he had some experience in life that was good for us.
Yeah. In fact, you just got back from a gathering, right, of former fellow veterans, right?
Yes.
B-17
yes.
flyers. So, yeah. So. Yeah. All from your group or just from your division?
No,
your
just
divisions?
All from our group.
Okay.
There are only 9 of us there, but there were about 60 kids and grandkids and friends.
Okay.
But the ranks have thinned considerably.
Sure.
As you get toward 90 years old.
Understandably.
Yes.
Understandably. Well, we'll take a short break and we'll come back and we're going to hear more. Bob Clemens just sharing his story today. It's Veterans Day and a very special edition of Connecting Faith. Talking with Bob Clemens. Bob is resident of White Bear Lake, Minnesota, and is a longtime veteran of World War II. We're getting some of his story today on Connecting Faith. Stay tuned for more. You're listening to Connecting Faith. Glad to have you along with us today as we spend a little time just talking about military service and getting perspective from a veteran who has seen much of that service, served in a station in Italy and flew about 50 B-17 bombing missions over Europe as a navigator. Bob Clemens is my guest today. Bob also has a great ministry today. We're going to find out about that as he does some important work, working with those that are in prison and incarcerated. But Bob, let's go back, talk a little bit more about your story. Your mother, was a good disciplinarian. She prayed for you. Talk about did you write letters back and forth to mom and at that time?
So oh yes, dad, wrote so, yeah. both. You know, mm-hmm. mom and dad both wrote to me. Sure. Actually, my dad wrote to me more than mother did.
Okay.
Mother was too busy praying.
Okay.
And there was one thing I always like to make clear. Sometimes we that were in the Air Force get too much credit. But, the men on the ground, the men on ships, everybody, the people back here at home, was a united effort. Everybody did a great job. So it wasn't just those of us in the Air Force that won that war. It just took a great effort by everyone.
You know, we've had since that time. You've seen several wars and conflicts over your years. Are there differences of, say, how people maybe rallied or supported in World War II compared to maybe the way it might be as now? What are your thoughts?
Well, in World War II, everybody was behind the war effort, and they were so the public. Was so nice to those of us in the service. Many times you'd get in a cab or go into a restaurant to eat and somebody would pick up the tab. And that still happens when people recognize us as veterans. They really are very, very nice to us. I've always appreciated how well the American public has treated us.
Yeah. Is there, as you think about it, maybe what meant the most to you in terms of the support back home or ways that we could honor veterans as we come across them, whether it's in a restaurant or a store or just in our neighborhoods?
Well, just a thank you to them. That's a great. When I see men and women that are serving today, I always walk up to them and thank them because they're doing a great job for our country. The military's a marvelous, marvelous organization. They have they train people very well, and they're great people that serve.
Do you end up talking about your service too when you run into young vets today?
Sure, sure. They'll ask, "Did you serve?" Or many of them will say, "Well, you look like you're from the era that maybe served in World War II." Just briefly tell them what
sure.
I did.
Sure. did you wonder about the you know, and we didn't talk ahead of time here, but did, and you don't have to answer if you don't want, but did you wonder about sort of the justness of the cause? Did you say, am I really doing what's right here? I know that, I mean, obviously you're looking at strategic positions, but you know there's always categories and situations where bombs don't land in the right place.
Yes. Well, my mother was such a student of the Bible, and as soon as Hitler began his killing of the Jews, she said he never can succeed because those are God's chosen people, and he's on the wrong path. Yeah. And so that's the attitude I took into
sure.
the war.
Sure. Your mother and dad were praying for you. Talk about it was some what 31 years later before you became a Christian. Did you appreciate the fact that mom was praying for you? Did that make a difference?
Oh, I mean, yes. Yeah, so. I like that. And I knew a lot about Jesus, but I didn't know him personally. Okay. And that's what happened 31 years later when I was 51 years old.
So tell me that story. What happened there? What were the circumstances?
Well, an organization came to our church, First Lutheran Church in White Bear Lake, that Church is Alive. They taught us how to do small Bible studies and how to do evangelism. And the first night the gentleman came, he was a former dentist that had given up his practice to do this. And he went through the four spiritual laws. And I had heard that before, but I hadn't listened. But this time, when he said, you can know that you're going to be saved, in the next couple of days, I made a commitment mm-hmm. to Jesus. And that's been a wonderful part of my life.
Yeah. You spent a lot, a lot of your life, though, sort of just in the, you knew about Jesus, but just never really yeah. followed him.
So, yeah. At going to church every Sunday and, being a lukewarm Christian.
Yeah. Sadly, there are still many in that category yeah. today, aren't there?
Yes. So,
yeah. Bob, talk a little bit about I want to get your perspective on words like duty and service and honor. Those were, kind of still define the military. What do those words mean to you?
Well, I thought it was a duty that as a young man given an opportunity in this country that I needed to serve this country because I grew up in that Great Depression. And as things began to improve, that looked pretty good because those are pretty dreary days in the Depression. Yeah. Although you had so much time with your mother and dad in the Depression because Dad didn't always have a job it really was a good time for many young people. Probably not as bad as people who didn't go through it think it was. It was okay. Mm. And everybody was poor. So you didn't stand out.
Yeah. You see men and women today who are wearing the uniform. I mean, there's still a call to serve and to defend the Constitution, too.
Yeah. Yes. And the cream of the crop. Mm. Boy, the people in the military are so sharp, and what wonderful people.
So were there some lessons, maybe some life lessons, some things in terms of training, I mean, that you took into your business life when you came back from the military? Because you got into, I think, insurance, right?
Is that, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, the training in the military was good. The discipline of having to do things on time and in the best manner possible, and the use of your time valuably, don't waste it. That those were good things that helped a lot in civilian life.
Yeah, lots of important life lessons that we need every day. So, did you feel qualified to do what you were doing? I mean, did you again? You said you were good at math. You had you said good training, but were you in a group of others who say, what are we doing here? We're flying these big planes, and do we know what we're doing?
It seemed like most guys had a lot of confidence. And I talk about guys because there weren't many women in the military then. But, yeah, they seemed to have enough confidence. And our crew certainly did. And I met that. That was one of the great things in the military. I met some wonderful people, just great people.
Yeah. Did you have opportunity to maybe get involved in any sort of encounters with believers? I know the Navigators, you know, had ministries there. I'm just kind of curious if you made some connections there.
Yes, I remember some people talking to me, and I kind of sloughed it off. Mm. I thought I've got a hold of this thing. I'm religious enough. And the spirituality hadn't set in yet.
Yeah. Bob Clemens, my guest today, we're just reflecting on his years of service, serving in World War II as a veteran. So have you gone back to Italy or Europe at all
I've been through Europe a couple of times on my way to the Holy Land. We were in the Holy Land in Israel in 1978 and 1983. Travel through Europe, but no, I've never gone back to Italy.
Yeah. What would you advise maybe a young man or woman today about, considering the military as a career or as just as a place to serve and to grow for a few years?
I think both ways. I've known some military people who've served many years, and I think they have a great place, and they do it very well. And I think some of the people that serve 3 or 4 or 5 years or a couple of years, it's good for them too, and they do a good job.
You know, we're talking here on Veterans Day, of course, the Armistice 11-11. What was it like when the war was over? Talk a little bit about that day. Where were you when you heard that word?
Well, both when the European War and the war in the Pacific were over, I was in training in Hondo, Texas, 40 miles west of San Antonio. I was in training at that time to go to the Pacific in a B-29. So I was absolutely delighted when President Truman decided to use the atom bomb, because that would have been a horrible experience. There probably would have been 2 million Japanese people killed and 1 million Americans if we'd had to invade the islands.
Yeah.
So I was really in favor of his decision.
Yeah. There was, I'm sure, a good amount of celebration, right?
Yes.
So did you have a term to finish up after that, or when victory was declared? So
the European War was over. We still were thinking that maybe the Pacific War would go on for a year or two more.
Sure.
And so we were still training for that.
Did you think about doing some flying? When you got out of the service?
Actually, when I got out of the service, I did get my commercial ticket just for the fun of it. I did not expect to use it as a making a living, but I thought it would be a good thing to learn to fly.
Yeah.
And we had the GI Bill. That's what we used.
And can you still navigate your way around, whether you're driving in the car or if it's you can find your way?
Yeah, I still find my way around.
We're talking to Bob Clemens. Bob is a veteran, and we just thought on Veterans Day to just honor those that have served in our military, and Bob's World War II vet, and just telling us some of his stories, and we're going to hear more because Bob's life since coming to Christ is taken as a turn, and he's found a unique ministry that we want to highlight, doing some great work, and we're going to spend some time talking about that in just a moment. So I encourage you to stay tuned here on Connecting Faith, and again, if you're wearing the uniform or have worn the uniform of our military service, we just want to thank you for your service today on this Veterans Day. You're listening to Connecting Faith, and today we've connected with Bob Clemens. Bob is a friend of Northwestern and a friend of radio here, and we just had the opportunity to get together and share a little bit about his story. 90 years old, has served as a navigator in World War II, stationed in Italy, flew in the B-17s, about 50 or so bombing missions, and significant war theater action, and came to faith some 30 years after that military service. And after, I don't know, you kind of spent your time in insurance, right? But talk a little bit about how ministry got going for you, because you, in fact, celebrated your 90th birthday in jail, as I recall, right?
Yeah. Yes, at Oak Park Heights, the maximum security prison in Minnesota. The warden and one of the newspaper reporters for the St. Paul newspaper put their heads together and decided they'd have a little celebration for me when I was 90. And we happened to be in the prison that day. We go in on the first and second and the fifth Tuesdays of every month, if there is a fifth Tuesday. And it happened, it was the second Tuesday in March, this past March, that my birthday, and they had they had a cake, which is kind of unusual, but so there was some staff there and inmates, and we had a great time. That's been a big part of my life. It'll be, 35 years I've been leading Bible studies in prison.
How did that come about?
Well, one of the dear brothers of the faith, Bob Glockner, worked with me one-on-one, and he told me, he said, you really have a rotten attitude about people in prison, because I thought they ought to build the walls higher and give the guards bigger clubs and throw away the keys. He said, you need to go into prison, and his business partner was going into the federal prison at Sandstone, and I started to go there with him in January of 1980. And it really caught a hold of me, and it's been a big part of my life. I've learned much more and I've gotten much more out of it than the inmates have.
That viewpoint is probably not all that uncommon, though, is it, that you experienced? I mean, without maybe knowing someone who was an inmate,
yes. Know,
yeah, we need stricter laws. We need tougher, yeah.
Yeah, that's, and I found some marvelous believers in prison, men who spend hours and hours praying and studying God's word. They really, and they're real missionaries. They reach out to the other men in prison. They have a real ministry there.
So you started doing some Bible studies, or just visiting one-on-one, or what?
Bible studies.
Yeah, okay.
In a group.
All right. And talk about maybe that first experience or two, where I imagine you were maybe a little nervous.
Yes. Yeah. I thought this is a tough place to go into, but it soon kind of grew on me. And then the chaplain asked me to bring Mary Nell, my wife, along. Right. And so she went with me kicking and screaming all the way, but she caught on too. And she continued to work with me until I started to go to Oak Park Heights, which is a maximum security prison, in July of 1987.
Doing ministry together is sometimes we have different viewpoints, don't we? Our wives think differently than we do sometimes, don't they?
Yeah, but she and I cooperate pretty well, yeah. And she's a great woman of Christ, yeah. and that's really helped me a lot.
Yeah.
And of course, former Governor Quay has been a big influence on my life, because we work together and the prison ministry.
Yeah. What are your thoughts about, maybe how we're doing prisons today, or how we're treating those in prison? I mean, now that you've had 35 years of up close and personal with these guys who are, experiencing, they're paying for their crimes. What are your thoughts about what
we're
doing?
Well, one of the things I'm proud to live in Minnesota, where Chuck Colson said we had the most sane prison system in the world, that we treat people with respect if they respect the authorities. And the people that run the prisons, the guards and the wardens and the administrative people, are wonderful people. And that they the prisoners that cooperate, they treat them very well, and I think that's the way it should be, because these men, each one of them was created in the image of God, just like me. So we need to give them a chance to express their faith in Christ, and some of them do a marvelous job.
So what kinds of things, when you come and do a Bible study in a group in prison, what are they, maybe what are the issues, what are the things that you end up talking about? And
well, for instance, at Oak Park Heights now, we're in the Gospel of Mark, and we might spend a whole time, a whole morning, which is only an hour and a half, on just a couple of verses, and sometimes five or six or eight verses. And so we take questions, we discuss the – we don't stand up and lecture to them. We sit among them and lead.
Okay. Sure.
And so I'm really impressed with the way many men in prison have grasped onto the good news of Jesus Christ.
Yeah. You've gotten to know them, I'm sure, a little bit about their stories. You know, give us a sense of kind of where these guys are coming from and maybe their past experiences.
Yeah. Well, one of the things that seems to impress me the most, most of them don't have a lot of male influence in their life. They were brought up in homes where mostly there were no dads. And I think that has a that's not universal, but that's that happens to a lot of them. And many of them do something that if they could take 90 seconds out of their life, they wouldn't do it again. And but the consequence, God forgives them their sin, but the consequence that man places on them sometimes is pretty tough.
Yeah.
A lot of them will never get out of prison. And so it's tough, but I think that they survive a lot better when they come to know Jesus.
You were a veteran and served in the military. I mean, you probably look at an you know, organization like the military and say there would be some benefits if, you know, if these guys could have maybe had the experience that I had. Huh?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. I think so. The experience of a mother and dad in a home, the experience of the military, the experience of society as a whole was very positive on my life.
Yeah. So do you are there some life lessons you think that maybe from the military that would help these young men behind bars?
Well, I think many of them, if they had been in the military, the discipline would have perhaps gotten them through.
Mm-hmm.
what turned out to be a bad turn for them?
Yeah, yeah. And I guess that's true for all of us, isn't it? I mean, the Christian life is a disciplined life, isn't
yes.
it?
Yes. So, yeah. Yeah. And again, I'm just amazed at how some of them spend their time very valuably studying God's Word. They bring to the Bible studies their Bibles, and they're all marked up, and they've spent a lot of time studying.
Yeah. Well, and you said you probably learned more than you've taught, right?
Oh, so, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, what would take a minute to encourage some others that maybe haven't gotten involved in prison ministry? Why should they do that, and what would it mean to just interact with those behind bars?
Well, the best thing they can do is get to know somebody that's going to get out in a year or two. Get to know them, and then when they get out, walk beside them for a year or so. Because, boy, that's a tough thing when they get out of prison. Can you imagine if you'd been incarcerated for 5 or 10 years, how the landscape in the Twin Cities has changed?
Yeah.
Just the road configuration and the streets and just everything is so different. And so if somebody would grasp and get a hold of somebody and visit them the last year or two there in prison, and then if they're an inmate that isn't going to get out, visit them, because some of them, probably 50% of them, don't have any visitors. And so that they love to see somebody from the outside.
Yeah, and you don't have to have all the answers, right?
So. No. You just have to be cleared by the Department of Corrections, and and it's a wonderful experience.
Yeah. Bob Clemens, my guest today. We're going to just take one more segment with Bob and talk a little about. Bob has enlisted in the Army Air Force back after high school graduation back in 1942, and was trained as a navigator during World War II. Served there, stationed in Italy, and flew B-17s. A part of the bombing missions, was a navigator on the B-17 crew, and has been spending much of his time for the last 35 years doing some great prison ministry. He's 90 years old this spring, and we want to just get a little maybe insight, some advice from a senior citizen, a seasoned citizen. We'll get Bob's perspective on life in just a moment. Stay tuned. Listening to Connecting Faith, and we're honored today to be spending some time with Bob Clemens, who's a World War II veteran, 90 years young, and literally he is pretty young, it seems like. You seem like you're getting along pretty well, Bob.
Well, God has blessed me with pretty good health. Yeah. I have a couple of conditions that are a nemesis to your health, but modern medical science is just wonderful how they can take care of you.
Yeah, that's true. There's no question about it. And it gets more amazing all the time.
Yes, it does.
So do you want to give a little advice, for enjoying a long life? As a 90-year-old, you're in kind of rare air there.
Well, I would say you I don't know if my diet has been exemplary, but I like fruit and vegetables. But I also like red meat and desserts. I think exercise is an important thing. And I think most thing that will help you the most is get to know Jesus personally. That'll make a big difference in your life. And it's the fellowship that you can have with other believers that is so amazing when you know Jesus personally, because you meet a lot of people that are in the same thinking as you are.
Yeah. As you look back over your years as a Christ follower, what's maybe different in your life today in terms of your walk of faith than it was when you first started out?
Well, I think one of the things, I like to listen to somebody that disagrees with me. I found that if I talk to people that agree with me, I don't learn much, but I learn a lot when I talk to somebody who disagrees with me.
And you're okay with being able to sort of go back and dig, see if you can find some answers, right?
Yes. Sometimes somebody that disagrees with me brings up something that I have to do a little research on and find out they may be right. They may have a good point.
Being open to other ideas isn't necessarily a hallmark of people that get older.
No. that's true. There are a lot of people, as they grow older, do become more open to open discussion.
Sure.
And I had a lot of fun at my 90th birthday in March this past year. Most of my family came to celebrate, all but my oldest daughter. And they all stayed at our house. And that was an interesting experience because they have some views that are different than mine, and it was fun to listen to them and to trade ideas with him.
And were you able to hold your own in the discussions?
Oh, I think so. I think so.
You've been a great friend to Northwestern, and you know, our radio ministry. You know, do you have some thoughts about why Christian education is so important, or is that an important part of your life? So,
well, as I associate at the University of Northwestern, I'm amazed at the caliber of young people who go to school here, and I went to the homecoming game. And that was a great experience for me. It always is. And John Delish had some nice seats for me. And it's fun to see the young people that are being trained to run our world and run our country in the future. I'm confident. I'm very confident as I look at young people today. I think they're wonderful. Even little kids, I noticed in church yesterday, little kids are so polite and nice. I really enjoy them.
Yeah, good. Bob, it's great to visit with you. I don't know if there's, we started out talking about your military service and talk about your prison ministry, and just wondering if there's, some other things we should talk about. It's maybe just a encouragement how we can maybe support those that families are in service today. Is there anything that comes to mind how we might better help those military wives while their husbands are serving?
Well, I think the first thing we can do is thank them, both the military person and their spouses and their families. Just a verbal thank you goes a long ways. Maybe a little written note at times. Makes them feel good, and they deserve that.
Yeah. Bob, I want to say thank you for your service. We are honored to spend some time with you and for all that you are continuing to do in your prison ministry. So.
Well, thank you for having me. This has been a real lot of fun for me to trade with you and our ideas.
Yeah, we've gotten to know Bob Clemens a little bit today, and wish you a great health and strength, and maybe just an increasing passion for the Lord. I mean, do you think about that? Say, I want to finish strong. What does that look like for you? You think, I want to run the race with endurance. What does that mean for you?
Well, one of the things as you grow older, you have a little more time to do things. One of the things that I've concentrated on, I read many more books than I used to. And there are some great books out there. And some of the groups I meet with, we go through some books, and then I read some books on my own. And that's one of the great things. And the study of God's Word, I'm in my 29th year of going to Bible Study Fellowship, and I enjoy that immensely.
The Word of God is living and active, so it's fresh every time you read it.
Yes.
Bob, blessings to you. Thanks so much for coming by today.
Thank you for having me. It's a real joy.
Bob Clemens joining us today on Connecting Faith. We have some time remaining on today's Connecting Faith, and because it's Veterans Day, I wanted to share a wonderful story that I heard some years ago. It was shared by Dick Foth. Dick is a pastor, a speaker, and he's worked in the Washington, D.C. area ministering to government leaders for many years. He was speaking in Colorado, and he talked about an outreach to soldiers that took place in North Platte, Nebraska. This is from a recording produced by the Military Ministry at Campus Crusade for Christ. They have a great organization, their military outreach at CRU, and recommend that to you. But I thought just to honor veterans and maybe just to provide a reminder of ways that we can continue to offer hope and encouragement to our men and women who wear the uniform, let's listen to Dick Foth talking about the North Platte Canteen.
Far from here is the town of North Platte, Nebraska. Anybody know North Platte, Nebraska? You've been there. North Platte's out there. It's, you know, you got to want to go to North Platte. In 1941, it was a town of 12,000 people. The Japanese attacked Pearl Harbor on December 7th, 12,000 people at this Union Pacific Railroad hub called North Platte. 10 days later, there was a train coming through with National Guard troops. The word went out it was Nebraska National Guard troops, and so some folks baked cookies and stuff and went down to the train. And they went down to give them some cookies, but they looked in the windows, and it wasn't Nebraska guys. They couldn't find any of their own. It turned out to be Kansas. But they stood there, you know, with the cookies and the cakes and stuff. And finally, one young woman by the name of Ray Wilson, a drugstore clerk, said, "Well, I'm not keeping my cookies. I'm not taking my cookies home." She stepped up and gave them to one of the young men, and then everybody gave their stuff. Immediately after that, when they started moving army troops through and sailors and stuff, Ray Wilson organized some women, and they decided they were going to meet the trains that came through North Platte, Nebraska. Bob Green, a journalist from Chicago Tribune, has written about this in a book called Once Upon a Town. And they started to meet the trains. And over the next 4.5 years, they organized mostly women, 55,000 women. And they met every train that came in, sometimes up to 32 trains a day. And the Union Pacific Railway gave the restaurant to them, and they dubbed it the North Platte Canteen. And they got 10 minutes to get off the train. These guys would jump off the train, run in there, and there would be wall-to-wall tables with sandwiches and cakes and pies. One woman said, "My job during the war was to make 10 angel food cakes from scratch with turkey eggs every week in the back of that train station." Everything was rationed. People had to give it out of their own goods. Only $5 came from the government, and it was a check from Franklin Roosevelt. Said, "I heard you're doing some good things out there," and he sent $5. The people of these towns like yours, all over that area, came there during the course of the war. I mean, these guys would jump out of the train, run in there, and there'd be hot coffee, there'd be donuts, there'd be pheasant sandwiches in season. And I said this at the Nebraska governor's prayer breakfast, and the senator came to me afterwards and said, "Sometimes pheasant sandwiches out of season." And they'd get back on the train, and they'd go off, many never to return. During the course of the war, 6 million United States servicemen and women came through North Platte, Nebraska, and every single train was met. And the story would go something like this. A guy would say, "I graduated from Brooklyn High School, never been out of New York City, went down and signed up on Monday. They put me on a train going west. I rode for 3 days a night, sitting up, eating K rations, not taking a shower, and somebody in the middle of the night said, 'North Platte, Nebraska, next stop.' Never heard of North Platte, Nebraska. Jumped off the train, ran into a place, and I saw girls who looked like my sisters and my cousins, and women who looked like my aunts and my mom. And they had all this food, and they gave it to us. And when we left, they hugged us, and they said, 'Sailor, we're praying for you. God bless you.' And we'd get back on the train, scared out of our minds, not knowing where we were going, not knowing if we'd ever come back. But when we went into that place for 10 minutes, something went away. We got back on the train and we went on. And in the middle of the night in France, with mortars coming down, when there was a lull in the fighting, a voice would come out of the darkness saying, 'Wouldn't it be great to be back in North Platte for 5 minutes? Because love chases away fear." And when Bob Green interviewed these guys, they'd start crying. 85-year-old guys start crying. He said, "What are you crying for?" He said, "Because here I was, an 18-year-old kid, scared to death. And I went into that place, and for 5 minutes in the middle of the night, in a place I'd never been to with people I'd never met, going to a place I didn't know, somebody loved me and was kind to me." I told this story in Denver a couple years ago at the 60th anniversary of Youth for Christ Campus Life. A young woman came up to me the next morning and said, "When you were telling that story, I thought about my grandpa. My grandpa was in the Navy, and he lived in Pennsylvania, and I wondered, did he go through North Platte, Nebraska?" She said, "My grandpa's 90 years old in a nursing home, and he has dementia. He doesn't remember us most of the time. But I called him, and I said, 'Grandpa, this is Jennifer.' And I said, 'Grandpa, does the name North Platte, Nebraska mean anything to you?' And he said, 'North Platte, Nebraska.' Instantly, he was lucid. 'You bet it does.' He said, 'I went in there and they gave me donuts and sandwiches and coffee and they shined my shoes. You bet I remember North Platte, Nebraska.'" What is it, 60 years after the fact, that brings a 90-year-old man out of dementia? When you're scared and you're 18 and you're going off to war, and on the way, somebody loves you and is kind to you.
That's the key to having an impact in any circumstance or situation, showing love and kindness. That's the story of the North Platte Canteen, as told by pastor and speaker Dick Foth, and that was produced by the Military Ministry of Campus Crusade for Christ. You can find out more about their great organization by going to crewmilitary.org. That's crumilitary.org. And thank you for listening to Connecting Faith, and for those men and women that have served our country, and those that still wear the uniform, we thank you, we honor you, we bless you for your service, and pray God's peace in your life today. If you missed part of today's show, you can always check out the podcast online at myfaithradio.com.